If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole deck with galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us here today. Today's episode is a really, really exciting one for me. So I'd like to just kind of get this intro taken care of and get right into the episode, both for you and for me. On today's show, we welcome back Ben Coleman to talk about some postseason scouting stuff. If you remember, the last time he was on the show, we talked a lot about how he was going about breaking apart this new spot that he had found in Oklahoma. Ben was fortunate enough to find some success in Oklahoma this year, as well as in Texas. Oklahoma was a brand new spot. Texas was all historical data and 4 years or so of putting things together and putting the pieces together. It's always a great time having Ben on the show here. Great energy, just a great all-around dude. And I'm happy to call him my friend today because of the podcast, which is really great. So we get into a lot of different things, mainly focused around postseason scouting. We talk about different types of things to look for, how Ben likes to go about breaking apart things, and how he differentiates his postseason scouting strategy from his in-season strategy or his summer scouting strategy. So it was really cool to kind of come full circle, being that we talked about the summer stuff, we jump into the postseason stuff now, and then we kind of bring it all together at the end to talk about his hunt over in Oklahoma. We also touch a little bit on his stuff in Texas, but we talk about some things that I'm sure you guys have heard about before, you know, finding the beaten trails and the thick stuff in the woods postseason can really serve to success in the coming season. But he also offered a lot of new perspectives, terms like unlocking an area and what that means to Ben, and just different things like that. It was just a really cool conversation. It opened up my eyes to some really cool new perspectives. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you guys get some value out of it as well. Before we get into the episode here, we're just going to take a quick moment to recognize our supporters and our partners of the podcast here. We have the Nested Tree Stand System, Vitalized Seed, Integrated Habitat Solutions, Tooth of the Arrow Broadheads, Truth Sticks Custom Arrows, Fire Knock, Rack Getter Sense, Hunt Arsenal, and Silver Birch Archery Shop and Hunter's Gallery in Milford, Pennsylvania, and Hamlin, Pennsylvania, respectively. If you guys are interested in checking out any of those websites and you want to support our show here, just scroll onto the bottom of the description there, and I've posted all of the links to these different companies and whatnot. For the Nested Tree Stand System, there is a code down there, WT10. Use that at checkout to save yourself 10%, and that helps to support the podcast here. And I just want to take a minute to specifically recognize Tooth of the Arrow Broadheads. There's going to be a code coming here soon in the next little bit. I'll be sure to get that to you guys. Hopefully I have that by next week. Just keep an eye out for that. And that'll also be on the Instagram. So again, thanks for joining us here, guys. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Without further ado, Ben Coleman. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. See you next week. Going on, guys. I am so excited to welcome Mr. Ben Coleman back to the show. How are you doing today, man?
Awesome, man. I'm excited to be back on. We've been chatting over text and so forth. But now that the season's over, get a little chance to chat in person.
Yeah, dude. The face-to-face, well, screen-to-screen, however you want to put it, you know. But, dude, I've been following your season all season. You've been posting stuff online, and you've been busy with a lot of other things. But before we get into that, it's been a little bit since you've been on the show. I think I don't know, we're going on a few months now, definitely before hunting season. So for anyone who's either forgotten or missed some of those episodes from the past, can you just give a quick rundown of who Ben Coleman is? Anything you want to listeners to know about you?
Yeah, my name's Ben Coleman. Right now I'm a full-time musician in Texas, and I've been hunting for pretty much my whole life, you know, about 30 years of whitetail hunting, about 12 years of hardcore public land hunting, elk hunting every year in Colorado, everything archery in the last, I don't know, 20 years mostly. Yeah, just obsessed with the outdoors, obsessed with hunting. I'm out there all the time, even in the off season. And music allows me to be out there a good bit too right now. So yeah, just all things hunting and outdoors for me.
Dude, it cracks me up because I'm like, I'll be scrolling through your stories, right? And earlier in the year, you kind of started early in the year with your big elk hunt with your cousins, I think your uncle, and you guys found a little bit of success out there. But as I'm scrolling through, it's beautiful picture, mountain scene, elk laying on the floor. Come see me play tonight in such and such place. You're playing next day. You're back in the woods. And it's just like this, this bang, bang, bang thing. And you got this huge juggling act, man. So,
well, God's been good because I've been able to, those are my two passions, like music and hunting. So now I do music full time. And so when I went up to Colorado, I used to live up there and I just booked a gig in it's not my hometown, but where I lived in Colorado. So Buena Vista, Colorado, played a show with some buddies that I first started playing music with when I first started playing. That was freaking awesome because we hadn't played together in 10 years. But yeah, I went hunting. We shot an elk, got all packed out. And then, you know, 2 days later, I'm playing a show in Colorado a couple hours away. Then I come back and do another 7 days of hunting. Like that's my stuff right there. I love it.
That's amazing.
Music and hunting. That was an awesome trip.
I love that.
But that's also kind of my everyday life too.
Yeah, just rub it in a little bit.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. It's work. It's work.
Yeah. You know what they say, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah. You know? I'm getting a little window of that right now and it's pretty freaking awesome. Hopefully we can figure out how to make it keep going.
And it's really cool to, you know, it's going to sound so silly, but it's really cool to experience your experiences with you through what you post. You're very good at capturing the right things at the right time, you know, it's going to sound silly, but the pictures and the lighting and the whole, like when you took pictures of camp with your uncle and your cousins and everything, and you could just feel the atmosphere in those images. And it was really cool to kind of come along with you on those journeys as you were doing that, man. It was a lot of fun.
Awesome, man. And just to set the record straight, not my uncle and cousins.
Oh, my bad.
I do hunt whitetail with my cousins. So that's probably where the confusion was. But yeah, it's just an elk hunting buddy in Colorado that I've been hunting with for like 12 years.
Gotcha. I thought you said you go on an elk trip with your uncle every year, but maybe I'm thinking of someone else. That's my fault.
No, he just looks like an uncle.
Okay.
Well, he just looks like he would be an uncle. He'll be laughing. He'll probably watch this. He'll be laughing.
That's great. So the last time we got together and we really sat down and talked, you had just released your first actual single and you had told me there were a lot of things in the works, and man, you weren't kidding. It was like you released one and then all of a sudden it was like one after the other. And all of a sudden things just start picking up. So before we start getting into the deer talk and the hunting talk, you know, I got a passion for music as well and guitar playing and stuff. So I always love to hear this kind of stuff. So talk to me a little bit about what that has been for you in this first, cause I know this was your first year of true full-time playing, you know? So what's that been like for you?
Man, thank you for asking. One full year in the books of doing music full-time, had two singles go to radio, which is pretty crazy. Got blessed with some connections there and they did pretty well. And then I think I have nine of my own songs out right now. So just trying to do the music thing. It's a hard industry to figure out, but I'm staying busy. You know, I play two, three, four, sometimes five times a week in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So just trying to play as much as possible, write music, put music out. I'm terrible at marketing, but trying to get better at posting videos and so forth, because that's a big part of the business these days.
Yeah, I feel that same thing here. I'm gonna give you a little shout out too, because if I'm not mistaken, you book private events and stuff like that too, right? Like whether it's a birthday or whatever. Anybody's down there in that Texas Fort Worth area, and you guys are looking for some live instrumental or music, give my man a call.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I do a lot of private shows, and we have a good time. Always have a good time.
That's awesome, man. So what we really want to get into today is this concept of scouting, specifically right now where we stand in postseason scouting. It's really cool because now I've kind of gotten to see a full picture of kind of how you like to do things, both on places where you're familiar with. So Texas, your home ground, where you've hunted for quite some time now, and then transitioning into Oklahoma, where if I'm not mistaken, this was your first year doing that, right?
Absolutely. Branched out into Oklahoma. Yeah. So I hunted Texas for the last, I guess, probably this is my fifth season. And that's been great, you know, all public and just getting crowded down here. I mean, there's a lot of population down here, a lot of big, you know, there's Dallas, there's Austin, there's all these different giant cities. So the public gets hammered because there's so many people. So branched out, decided to invest the time to unlock some new territory north of here in Oklahoma, and put a lot of effort in last summer, as you know, into scouting in the summer. and summer scouting is its own thing, you know, opposite of, or not opposite, but different from postseason scouting. But hey, the more you're out there, the more you can start to put the pieces together. But it was really cool for me to me, because that's the first time, you know, I have, that's the first time I've tried to unlock new, completely new territory with what I felt like was a good knowledge base of how to go about it. And I wanted to do it as quickly as possible and as successfully as possible, obviously. And I was like, I'm going to just try and leverage every little piece of information I have about whitetail hunting and try and get this thing done. And I think I'm really happy with how it went. Yeah. Really happy with how the season went.
I mean, you found success in, if I'm not mistaken, both states, right? You shot one in Texas. I think you shot yours in Oklahoma first, and then you shot one in Texas with Stan, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the one I shot in, I can't remember which one came first. You know, I mainly hunted Oklahoma. I passed on a good deer that I should probably not have passed on.
Did you send me that? You sent me that picture. I'm pretty sure. I was like, oh my goodness. You're like, no. There's better ones in here.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a giant that morning, and that's why I passed on him, because I thought, oh man, if this one's coming out this early, that other one's going to come out after him. And it was, I mean, it was that night. It was the night after I saw the giant, and it was the same spot, and they came right through the same little pinch. Fed on acorns in front of me for, you know, 5 minutes. Could have shot him all day long at 15, 20 yards. So I was like, I'm going to put all my eggs in the basket of the big one. And I kind of regret it, but hey, it's a cool experience. You always kind of feel like you win a little bit just by getting them in bow range.
Cause that's kind of something that I'm working on still. Like right now, we've talked about this before. I'm really good at getting in the woods and finding sign or trails or rub lines and stuff like that, and where they like to travel. What I have a really hard time doing still is taking that information and building off of it to find the X, right? Like I'm able to find the island, but dialing into that X where I need to be, that's still what I'm trying to work on. And I felt like going into this year, we had been texting back and forth. I was sending you pictures. Like, I feel like I really had it going this year. And that's why, like, everything that happened with me with the health issues and whatnot, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Because for the first time, I really felt like super confident that I had a good foundation to build off of. And then the wind was just taken out of the sails so quick, which is also why I said it was really cool to kind of like live through your experiences with you, because we kind of talked about doing things the same way. And even though I wasn't able to get in the woods and physically do it, I'm watching you take what we talked about and using it and finding success. So I'm like, all right, that's the next best thing. If I can't physically do it myself, it's really cool to watch someone else use the same tactics and things or whatever and get that done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get to see the story unfold. And that, I mean, that's one of the coolest things about hunting in general, especially with whitetails, is like the story, whether it's the story of the specific deer or the story of that spot that you found or the story of the season or the property. It's like, it's all about stories, and that's, it's fun to get to keep up with somebody else's or your own, or, you know, see how we don't know how the story's going to play out, but I like how the story's going so far in Oklahoma, because it's the best. I'm getting to hunt bigger deer than I've ever been able to hunt before. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting for me. You know, I grew up in South Carolina, so it's like the worst public land deer hunting you could expose yourself to. Like, you know, a basket eight would be like an anomaly to get to see there. Yeah. So this is, I'm pretty fired up about Oklahoma.
That's awesome. So what I would like to do is I would like to talk about, I want to focus mainly on the postseason scouting, obviously, because that's kind of where we are right now. But I want to quickly breeze over your summer scouting, because I think that also goes together, you know, because depending on how you want to look at it, you could, like Oklahoma, for example, your journey started with summer scouting. Then it went into hunting season where you scouted on foot, found some success, and now you're going to build off that in your postseason scouting. Texas, on the other hand, it's kind of like this cycle. You don't know where it's ended or started anymore, because it's, you know, it's all in motion now. So talk to me a little bit, refresh my memory on how you went about scouting in the summer for this Oklahoma property. To just paint the stage for you, or for the listeners, this was, again, virgin ground. You went in, I know you went in with some cameras. You did, if I'm not mistaken, you did a lot of e-scouting first before you got there, and then kind of built off of that knowledge that you collected in e-scouting. So from there, take it away and share a little bit about how you went about scouting to set yourself up this year.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So e-scouting, once the decision was made to invest the time in Oklahoma, you know, a lot of the work can be done on e-scouting. The first thing to think about is, are there big enough bucks here that are going to make it worth it for me to move my time from one area to another? So that's the first box I wanted to check. Are there big bucks here? To discover if there's big bucks there, I need to get a picture of them and I need to know where they're spending their time. Well, summer bucks and season bucks do completely different things. So my thought is, hey, they're just going to be on the food sources. They don't care about pressure right now. They're not getting pressured. So on the e-scouting, I basically was like, where's the most food? Doesn't matter about pressure, all that stuff. It's just, where's the most food? So this WMA had, or whatever they call it in Oklahoma, this public ground had some food plots on it, or like some fields that they manage. So I was like, okay, that's where most of the deer are going to be, I'm guessing. And I went out putting minerals out and glassing. And man, I have not been able to do glassing in the past, but glassing really was huge. It's kind of like my new thing this year. That's a different topic.
That's awesome.
Observation hunts and glassing is like, I'm into that now, even for whitetail in this area. So found some, you know, over the course of the summer, I probably went up there 6 times, moving cameras around, moving cameras around, glassing, marking every time I see a group of does. Like the evening time was crucial because like the does would just, like, you know, get up on a high point, just glass and be like, okay, doe group here, doe group there. I know that's going to be valuable. I know that's going to be very valuable during the season because doe group behavior doesn't change hugely.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can kind of play connect the dots in the rut with, hey, this doe group's here, this here's this here. And then when you pull up your Onyx and you see all these does that you marked, like it tells you where most of the does are hanging out. Well, I checked the box. There are big enough bucks there to get me excited. And so that's kind of this really short version of my thought process in the summer. Is there big enough bucks there to get me excited? And where are all the deer going to be when pressure is not an issue? So they're going to be on the food. And then how many doe groups can I mark on my Onyx? Because that's what's going to be valuable in the season. Now, I will say I did not find a lot. This is something that kind of worried me. When I was doing a lot of miles, putting on a lot of miles, I didn't find a lot of historical sign. Like I didn't see rubs that stood out. Didn't see scrapes that stood out. I was like a little confused by it, but I knew the bucks were there. Well, long story short of that is just the sign just looks really old. And there was plenty of scrapes, plenty of rubs when the season started rolling around. But okay. That's kind of summer. That's summer.
Okay. Now, in my experience in New Jersey, whenever they allow, there's a lot of farmers who lease out, or the state leases out a lot of acreage to farmers to either plant corn or something on state, like state WMAs. And then, you know, I don't know what the agreement is, if the state takes a little cut or whatever. I don't know how that works. But what I do know is in any of these public land places where they decide to plant crops, it is overrun with hunters. Did you experience any of that kind of pressure on a WMA on public land with some kind of food source?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like the bulk of the hunters were centered around this area, but this is a bow only area. And the areas that I hunt in Texas are bow only areas and they're way more pressured. So I wasn't really like worried about pressure too much because I've had success in other areas where there's lots of pressures. You just kind of have to trust yourself that you'll be able to kill the deer and they won't,
okay.
or that there's plenty of deer to go around, you know?
Sure. Cause one of the big things you talked about in Texas, like one of your favorite tactics was I know it's high pressure and I know where a majority of the pressure is. So I go the long way around just to get in behind the pressure and it works out a lot for me. Did you have to do any of that in Oklahoma as well? Or was it not enough pressure that you felt like you had to really alter your plan to, you know, get away from people?
Yeah, to be honest with you, like I was seeing big deer not very far from the road, which surprised me and encouraged me. I felt like there were plenty of big deer to go around in places that were far away and not far away. And like I said, I'm only one season in. I hunted up there probably 20 times, you know. So I don't know if people think that's a lot or a little, but I get out about twice a week. So I guess I'm saying that I don't know it as well as I will by the end of next season. But from my one season in, I don't feel like it was overly pressured. And even if it was, you know, I'm fine with pressure because.
And you're fine with what you saw.
I mean, I'm kind of used to it. Yeah. Successful. Yeah. I'm like, as long as I'm having good hunts, I'm seeing deer where they should be. If I see a few other trucks, like no big deal. Like it's way less pressure than I was experiencing the other place. So I'm happy about it.
Okay. I love that, man. Now, normally we would go in order and we would talk about summer and then we would talk about your actual season and the hunt, because I do want to hear about the story, but I want to actually go a little out of order here. And I want to jump to your postseason scouting. So in my opinion, I love postseason scouting because it gives you an opportunity to see where deer like to go when they're feeling pressure, when the foods, when the normal green leaf food sources have dissipated. It gives you a lot of knowledge that you can use and take into the next season. However, on the other hand, a lot of people will say, okay, that's good and great and Dan, but I like to hunt the rut, or I like to hunt October. I like to hunt early, you know, late September, and that late season data doesn't really help me much. So before we go into your actual, how you like to postseason scout, what's your opinion on how valuable the information is that you use, that you find now, and when does the information you find in postseason scouting actually become valuable?
Like, yeah.
Part of the season wise.
Yeah. I totally see what you're saying there. And I have the same thoughts kind of go through my head about all this sign is late season sign, right? But I think postseason scouting is like a must. I think it's like one of the most valuable times you can be in the woods in season, like even more than in season scouting. I know that sounds crazy, but, and the reason for that is, did that kind of answer the question? To some degree.
Yeah, I was literally about to ask why is it so valuable? You went on to say it. So
yeah, well, when you're, well, all the leaves are off the trees. A lot of times all leaves are off the trees. All the trails that are the most important trails are beaten down as much as they're going to be beaten down as close to the season, hunting season as possible. And so it lets you know what the deer have been up to the last couple months, which is the bulk of the season. So yeah, it is late season sign, but I think that's even more valuable. And here's why, is because it's sometimes in season, it's a little confusing because there could be sign everywhere, but you don't know where the main sign necessarily always is. But I feel like late season, when they have experienced pressure and they've been pushed to the security spots, that's the main sign. It sounds simple when you just say it, when you're talking, but when you actually see it in the woods, it's that much more valuable because you get to see where the deer get pushed to, where they feel secure late season after all the pressure. And you get to see the trails that go from that security to the different food sources. And I'm talking, you know, this is thick southeastern related, big woods related type of habitat I'm talking here. So I think because you get to see where their security cover is, I kind of think about that as like their spawning point, like their nucleus. Like when things really hit the fan in the woods with pressure, you know that that's where the deer feel the safest. And as you move into spring and summer and they start moving back into patterns that where they're not being pressured, all those other trails kind of pop up where they're exploring further and whatnot. But right after the season, you get to see the main trails coming from their true security places on the property. And when all the leaves are on the trees and the foliage is grown up on the forest floor and so forth, it can be like really guessing at what signs what, you know. So it doesn't always, the best trails don't always jump out to you. But when it's February, right after the season, it's very obvious. Like it is out, you're out there reading a book and you can blaze through the woods so much faster. You can learn so much more. You can drop more pins. The rubs still stick out. The scrapes still stick out. You can move 3, 4, 5 times as fast as you would in season scouting. So you're covering more ground. You're not worrying about busting anything. You're just getting to take in a whole season's worth of knowledge in an area in an hour and a half scouting through there. So I bust out of my, it's crazy. It's crazy. People, if people aren't doing that, they're crazy. It's the best. It's the best. And you get to maybe one of my favorite things about postseason scouting is that you get to go look at all these hunches you had throughout the season. You know, like, oh, I bet they're coming from over there and that thick stuff. But during the season, you don't want to go bust in there and mess it all up. But after the season, you go right to the tree you hunted, go right over there, and you get to know if your hunch was right. Because it's all about, you know, during the season, a lot of it, you're guessing. You're guessing, like, based on the sign that you have access to. But you have access to all the sign after the season.
Yeah.
All the sign. You get all the cards on the table.
I got you. I love that. Now, do you feel like this security cover and these patterns that they narrow themselves down to when they feel all this pressure, do you feel like they narrow down to these places because they've been safe there all year, year after year? Or do you think they have pockets of places that are like, okay, this thicket is where I need to go late season, and this is where I could go early season? Like, Do you feel like it's seasonal for them, or time of year, or time of the hunting season, or do they have these main places that they go to because that's where they find safety year round?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think it's just the natural rhythm of the seasons and the pressure that push them there, because people usually do the same thing year after year, right? During the hunting season. And deer are living out there all year round. I think deer are very, very good at about doing what they need to do at different points of the year to thrive. And so it's just going to be, for deer, it's a lot of times the same thing year after year, whether that's their favorite place to have a community scrape, or their favorite place for a rub line, or favorite trail to check does, like year after year after year, you can count on those types of things. And so this, yeah, it's the same thing with the ebb and the flow of pressure in the season. It's the same thing. Deer kind of predictably end up getting pushed to those thick spots. And it's unbelievable when you're out there and all the leaves are off the trees, you're like, this is the thick spot. But when you're out there in the summer, you're like, everything's thick. So you think it is thick, but it's really not.
Yeah.
As soon as the leaves start coming off. And 100%. And I could go on forever about postseason scouting. The great thing.
Please do.
And, you know, like a lot of people have a tough time in late season hunting because it's past the rut and because maybe the deer change their habits or whatever. But you get a playbook now for your late season next year. I had a really cool moment with that in Texas, because last year I did some late season scouting and I've been there for 4 years. So like I know it really well, but I'm like, okay, where do I want to scout that's going to give me new knowledge? And where do these freaking deer go? Like, and I really put in a day until I found what I felt like was like, this is where they go late season. Like, and there's a lot of pressure there. And so I did really thorough scouting of that, left a lot of trail pins, you know, pins on trails, and like really specific types of theories on it all based on the sign. So not really theory. I didn't get to hunt Texas much this year. I went right in there this year. I didn't hunt Texas until like the last 2 weeks of the season, 3 weeks of the season, but I had a playbook for it. I didn't need to be in there. Like I had a playbook for it because the deer kind of do the same thing year after year if the pressure is the same, which it usually is. And I just went right back into this spot. Everything was kind of the same. The trails were the same, and put a camera on a tree and got a hammer of a buck using a trail that was worn down to the dirt, but it was back in an area where most people don't get to. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that one day of scouting allowed me to find a deer that was like, for this property, a freaking hammer, you know? So that was really cool for me. I didn't shoot it. I'm not sure if I saw that deer. I'm not sure if it was that buck, but it was another really good buck. I did see that one on like my second hunt in there at about 60 yards. And if I would have been up in a tree, I'm not sure if I texted you about that one, but mm-mm. I was really tired that day, like really running low on sleep. I got in late to the woods and it was dead quiet every step. And I knew that area was going to be touchy. So rather than make the noise of going up in a tree and the time it would take, I was like, let me just sit on the ground against this tree. And he spotted me. Oh. He was coming right to me. I mean, like it was one of those, I never do that. I know not to do that. I know that that's the weakness with being on the ground in that scenario, but it's just like, with lack of sleep will do that. It'll make you make some bad decisions. And I was just a little lazy and I was like, I'm just going to sit against this tree for like the last 45 minutes of daylight.
Yeah. And because you got in where that deer feels comfortable, even though he saw you and things weren't kind of okay. I mean, you said you only got off like the last week or two. They usually say it takes a couple of weeks for a deer to get back to like normal patterns, but it sounds like you got deep enough and you did enough of your homework that you got to a place where even though he spotted you and you kind of got busted that one time, it didn't ruin your opportunity in those follow-up hunts, which is really cool.
Yeah. I think deer have normal patterns they have their regular daily pattern for if there's a lot of pressure or if there's not. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're totally right. Like it takes a few weeks for them to jump back into their, oh, we're not being pressured pattern. But even in the areas when they are being pressured, even in those areas that they find that are safe, they still get up and move around well before dark. And that's kind of what it was so cool because like I did all that work last year after the season. Mm-hmm. And this year I just got to go in and have a couple great hunts because of it. I very easily could have shot a deer in there if I just got up in the tree, you know?
Yeah. But that's kind of the fun in it. I don't know if I told you, but my listeners have heard this story, so I'll make it quick. But earlier this year, the New York season opens on the 1st, October 1st every year. Whether that's a weekday, weekend, doesn't matter. It opens October 1st.
Cool.
The season opened on a Wednesday this year. So from my job, I took off Wednesday, Thursday, went back to work on Friday. But my dad, we had last year, my dad had that debacle with the Big Ten that I sent you pictures of last year. We never saw that deer again. I have no idea. Who knows? But this year we had a couple nice ones on camera again. And my dad asked me, he's like, do me a favor, please don't sit on the food plot. Let me at least get the first sit on the food plot. Okay, no problem. I'll do that for you. So I sat a couple, like, you know, not perimeter sits. I did get into the property, but kind of low pressure sits. If I was going to see them, it was going to be good for me. And if I didn't see them, it wouldn't be bad for me type of deal. You know what I mean? So I go back to work on Friday. My dad and I both go hunting on Saturday. Knowing this property and no early season, we do not need to be in the woods in the morning. There's just no reason. They're more consistent. Their patterns are more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Predictable
in the afternoons. So I get in my tree, on one food plot, my dad gets in his blind on the other. About 2:30, 3:30, something like that, doe comes out, boom, I pop her. So I'm over the moon. It's the first deer I ever got on camera, first shot on camera, first deer on a food plot, like just a new broadhead, just a whole lot of things going on. And then as I'm so excited, I'm texting people or whatever. Long story short, our number one hit list buck, as I look up, is walking right through my only shooting lane. Same day, within 45 minutes of shooting the doe, he's just strolling through eating. Didn't like stop and feed, just kind of walked right through, put his head down a couple times and left. A problem with my spot is the way I have it set up is it's the only tree that I could be in where I'm protected for most of my perimeter, like, 360 type of deal with wind and all that stuff. It's on the low end of the food plot. So as the sun is coming down, the thermals are going to pull down towards the water. It's just the perfect spot. The only downside is with how thin the bigger trees are over there, I only have one tree I could sit in. And the only cover I have is this apple tree, which is great, but it blocks my shot for like that whole half of the food plot.
Yeah.
And then to the left, technically I could shoot it, but there's no reason, because if I have a shot on my left, they're going to walk right through that other shooting lane. So I give up all shooting lanes for the one perfect shot. And I just shit the bed.
Yeah.
You know, so it was so frustrating, because on one hand I had it all dialed in. I had the whole system ready, all season scouting, blah, 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 whatever. And then, you know, a couple weeks go by, and then my dad ends up shooting that same buck. So it's like a bittersweet type of deal. But it was a good time, you know. And that was where was I going with that? Oh, you were saying that you make silly decisions in the moment, and then you look back and hindsight's 20/20. Same deal, man. You know, like, I did everything right. I was in the right place, and I just did the wrong thing when I needed to do the right thing. You know. So what are you gonna do?
I don't know, man. I think there's so many wins. There's so many wins in deer hunting that don't have to do with killing a deer. Like, if the biggest win for me is not the biggest win, but, you know, even seeing deer in bow range is a win, right? I could shoot that. I'm not shooting. Seeing deer in bow range is a win. When you see a target buck from the stand you chose, like, that's a giant win. Even if you don't shoot him, it's a giant win. And so,
because it's the first time in the 5 years that we've had this property, every year we've had a deer we wanted to shoot. My brother's had opportunities at him. My dad's had opportunities at him. It's just never come together for me. I've had smaller bucks that I've chose to pass, but it never came together for me where I was in the right place at the right time, and the one I wanted was there, you know. So it's like, as equally excited as I am for it all to come together, I'm so upset at myself for just not staying focused when I should have been, you know.
If it was something
like, you know, the wind swirled and he caught my scent, or just something that was not, I don't want to say out of my control, but, you know, a little less of my fault, I guess you could say, I could live with that. That was literally a mental error. That's like
you weren't paying attention.
Yeah. That's like ground ball, two outs in the bottom of the ninth inning, and you need this out to close up a perfect game, and you just mess up the throw. You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is. It's a learning experience for sure, you know, but
you live and you learn. It sounds like, real quick add on here, it sounds like you could benefit from a mock scrape right there. Like, if you have to be in that tree, mm-hmm. have something that the bucks want to come by when they're in the area.
Yeah.
A mock scrape in a good shooting lane. Sorry, I can't figure out my new. Oh,
I've really been, I've seen a lot of people online doing a lot of like putting in their own scrape tree, like in the middle of a food plot. I've thought about doing that a little bit, just finally, because the property is like 2 hours away from us. So for us to get out there and do this stuff, and I know it sounds like it's excuses and stuff, but right now we're still trying to get the harvest done, and we're trying to like get our management plan going, you know? Yeah. So there's kind of like a priority tier type of deal or whatever you want to say. But the cool thing is where I was sitting, I was right on the uphill side, just off wind of a bedding area. And the coolest part about this hunt was I got into my tree about 1230, 1245. And as I'm finishing setting up my camera gear, I look over my shoulder and I have three deer bedded behind me. So the entire day I had deer just off downwind of me and never knew I was there at all. It was now like just saying this stuff out loud. There's so much positivity that came out of that hunt. It was just really
cool. Sounds like an awesome hunt. Yeah,
man. And the way they came in, they definitely crossed my foot trail without a doubt. So that tells me that either I was hunting in the right place where they didn't care that they smelt it, or my system for scent control and stuff was good enough that it didn't bother them, you know? So it was just all these little things that kind of like stacked on top of each other. It made that hunt a lot of fun. It really was.
Yeah. I'd say sounds like there's a lot of wins in that hunt. Yeah. A lot of wins. Yeah. Little wins.
We're 100%. We're gonna pull it together for next year. But now we're talking about taking stuff that you learn in season and applying that in the postseason scouting, right? Like, I remember that thicket over there and I didn't want to go there, but now I can. When you're sitting in your stand in season, are you one of the guys that brings a notepad out and you're taking notes with you as you're hunting? Or do you pull out your Onyx and kind of put little pins and say, okay, I want to check this out in postseason. I want to check this out in postseason. Is there anything that you do in season that kind of sets the stage for your postseason scouting?
1000%. Because when I'm always hypothesizing and running. I'm asking myself questions about, you know, why the deer are doing this, why they're not doing this, where are they in this moment? So, and man, it really is problem solving that there. I'll have thoughts that I wouldn't have if I wasn't thinking about it all the time. And obviously I like to, so that's why I'm thinking about it. But when I'm sitting there in the stand, I'm always thinking, what are the deer doing? What are they doing? They're not here. Where are they? And I'm a lot of times in the stand, I'm on Onyx. I'm looking at the topography. I'm just constantly asking questions and hypothesizing. And then I'll make a note on my Onyx and it'll be like a point of interest with a certain color. And that'll tell me, hey, I was interested in this while I was scanning the topography on Onyx. Like that's a huge thing. Like just scanning on the maps in your hunting area and really analyzing and thinking through how a deer move in an area, you'll have these little hypotheses, these little thoughts pop in your head about what the deer might be doing. And then you get to go in and check that out. You might do it during the season. You might do it after the season. Depends on time. And like a lot of this has to do with time. Like we have limited time, right? But no, I would say a lot of the most important scouting decisions I make are when I'm sitting in the deer stand. And I just kind of build this little list of places I want to get to for various reasons. And then as the season kind of chugs along, I might be checking off answers to those. So by the time that the postseason rolls around, I kind of have my hit list of points of interest that I really want to check out a lot. And I've got to go out postseason scouting twice since the season. And it's been wonderful.
Dude, sidebar. You find some of the craziest things in the woods, dude. Like the one day, just the other day, you posted something. Some dude, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. He took basically like a Viper climber type of deal.
Oh yeah.
And drilled holes into the sides of it and put big wheels on it, essentially.
Pretty smart.
And then welded or screwed or bolted, whatever, a handle to the other side. So that way he could use it as a deer cart to pull his deer out of the woods if he shoots one. But he's also now has a footrest built into that tree stand because he's got that handle there. He also doesn't have to carry the tree stand in. So now I'm thinking the dude's maybe like older, injured, and can't carry it on his back. Like there's so many thoughts going through my head with that.
It's pretty smart. He's probably like, this is my spot. I like this spot. I shoot deer here and I don't want to leave my cart in here. And so when I shoot a deer out of the stand, I just turn the bottom of my stand into a drag cart. Pretty smart. For that.
Dude, that's amazing. And then you saw another one. It was like, no trespassing. I'm running out of places to hide the bodies or something like that. You're like, yeah, 10-4, got it.
We're getting tired of hiding the bodies. And that guy also, you know, I found where he put a freaking giant feeder on the public land.
I'm like, that's right. You did. I think it was the next picture. It was like on public land. Sick.
Yeah. I'm like, come on, dude.
Yeah, that's frustrating. That's a whole tangent for a whole nother conversation. But I literally just had this. I had a solo podcast a couple of weeks ago where one of the things I touched on was, I feel like this is going to sound like such baby shit, but I feel like too many people get away with doing the wrong thing in the deer woods, and they get away with it unscathed, like nobody checks them at the door, or the fines they get aren't enough, or you have some big name, very well-known people out in the industry today who do things wrong, either behind the scenes or not behind the scenes, and get rewarded for it. And we don't have to get into that conversation. That's my complete opinion. But I feel like there's more than enough people who are doing it the right way, finding really, really good success, who would be really good role models and really good teachers, that I feel like we should be uplifting a little bit more than people who are doing it the wrong way and just shooting big deer. That's kind of my 10 cents on that.
Yeah, it's a good point. Who's the best at marketing?
But yeah, literally 100% is, it's, and I get it, you know, big deer sell and it is what it is. It's part of it, you know, but I think if we just put our focus in the right place and doing things the right way, A, I think we would have a little less of that going on, but B, I think our sport would be a little bit more appealing to the non-hunting community or people thinking about getting into hunting, you know? So again, that's kind of my two cents on that. But
yeah,
as you're planning your scouting, your, whether it's post scouting or in season scouting or whatever, what drives your plan? Do you pull more of how you want to go scouting or where you're going to scout from successes that you've had in the woods? Or do you pull more of your plan for scouting from what some people would consider a failure? Whether it was you saw that deer earlier we were talking about and it saw you and it busted out, or, you know, you're in one place and the deer 60 yards in the other direction, or whatever the case may be. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, that's a great question. I never thought about it from that. It's, for me, it's all about like satisfying hunches, you know? It's like, okay, mm-hmm. I look at the maps, like I said, all the time in the stand. I'm like, I just know there's got to be a big deer in this area, you know? So I want to go check out that area. Or, mm-hmm. or I think this is an overlooked area. Let me check it out. Or I saw a guy parked there all season. I want to know. And I didn't go in there, you know, just because I got a lot of places to hunt and I didn't see a reason to mess with that guy's area when it's, you know, all the same to me since I haven't been there or there. Mm-hmm. But post-season, like, I'll give you a prime example. So there's the biggest roadless area where I'm in the new area I'm hunting. I scouted half of it during the season. I did a big loop. Not much sign, just giant, endless, monotonous woods. Not much sign at all. It was during the rut. I was disappointed with that amount of sign. And then there's this like knife ridge that divides an equally sized area on the other side of it that's a little more accessible. And I was like, those big woods really just spoke to me. I was like, nobody's back here. Not a lot of sign, but, you know, a really big buck that wants to get away from pressure does have everything he needs back here. But there wasn't enough sign during the season to make me want to throw a hunt at it. Also hard to access. So just having, I was just have this hunch that like, hey, there's so much security back here, food cover, that I could see a big buck living back here undisturbed. And so like, I think it was yesterday or the day before, I went up there and I scouted that area that I hadn't scouted where I'd seen the guy parking a lot. And I found out that he was hunting, you know, human signs pretty easy to find a lot of times too. I found out he's probably hunting 200 yards from the truck in the most obvious spot possible. Then I followed the main trail back. And this is why I love post-season scouting, because it reads like a book, as later on in the year, different times of the year, it doesn't. Like, it's way harder. But I follow the main trail back, rub, rub, rub. And I'm like, okay, this is the main highway right here, or this is an important highway here. I just follow back. And it's a lot of sign. Hit some thick cover. You know, now I'm past where that guy was hunting. Hit some thick cover. I find a bedding area. I mean, it's clearly like a bedding thicket that I can see where they're bedding in. On the other side of that, I'm getting more into this wilderness area I was talked about earlier. And it's moving up to that ridge that's just more and more wilderness away from things, harder to access, would be very hard to access quietly. And I'm marking all the sign. And by the time I was done with that, I think I had probably 70% of the relevant information for that 300 or 400, 500 acres of what I think is really important. And I move pretty dang quick. Like I'm walking fast because I know, you know, time's money, right? Like, or time, I want to go scout. I scout another spot after that, but I'm like, okay, here's the main area. I think, let me check this. I'm like, I'm seeing a cedar tree on like a flat knob over there. I'm like, I need to see if there's a scrape there, you know, book it 150 yards across the ridge, no scrape there. Dang it. I zigzag over here. So I'm like, I'll find the main stuff. And then I'm looping around to make sure I'm not missing another piece of the story, mm-hmm. just to confirm what I think is right. And as I'm doing that, I'm putting enough pieces of that puzzle together to be like, okay, this is the hub of where I need to be in the season. Yeah. And
you're scouting while you're scouting is essentially what's happening.
Yeah. 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 I'm so much more productive scouting postseason. It's so much more productive. And, you know, you can tell where the important sign is and where like the stuff that you don't have to pay attention to, because, and I didn't say this earlier, maybe this is a better way to put it, but the sign that you should mark is the sign that sticks out more than all the other sign. That sounds obvious, but like when you're out there, you need to be thinking, okay, there's this level of sign everywhere, but then there's another elevated level of like how much this trail is worn down. Mm-hmm. How many rubs are in this area? How many scrapes are in this area? Like you might find a little scrape randomly in the woods, depending on your area. But then like this area I hunted, what got me really excited about it is there's not a lot of sign back there. It's weird. It's a part of the property. There's not a lot of sign, but it's a big, vast part of the property. And so when I do find a lot of sign in one area of that vast part, that tells me that I need it, that I just found the spot in the big area. And I also theorize that it's a big enough, secure enough area that a big buck would gravitate to a spot like this. I also found out that guy that's parked there all the time hunts like 100, 200 yards from his truck. Mm-hmm. I also don't want to access from the same place he's accessing. Not even because he's there. Just I can go way around the long.
You don't even want the deer to know.
Oh, the access is going to be great. It's going to be a long walk, but I can walk up the other side of this ridge, let all my wind blow off the back, and I'm going to be looking at hardwoods on the backside of bedding. And I just know those deer are going to be happy to do their thing mid-morning back there and feel safe because they are used to the other pressure coming from that way.
That's awesome. So now I love all that. I love all that information. And I'm gonna pose the same question here a little bit differently, a little bit more straightforward, in like a scenario type deal. So let's say you have let's say you're in Oklahoma, right? We'll use Oklahoma because Texas, it seems like you have a really good grasp on things and you're kind of building, you're writing more chapters rather than starting the book, if that makes sense. So let's say you're in Oklahoma. This year, you had some success. You shot a buck. Let's say something else happens. And I don't know if you saw some other deer and had a bad opportunity, either got busted or whatever. But one scenario is a buck comes in, reads the script, boom, you make a beautiful shot, harvest the deer, everything works out great. You have another scenario where you either get busted or you're not quite on the X or something happens where, you know, some may consider it a failure, let's say. Which one of those is going to encourage you more to say, wonder why the deer came from there? Like if you kill a deer, are you after you're all excited and taking pictures, are you going, okay, let me go take a walk over there and see why he came from that direction? Or is it more so, okay, I got busted. Let me see why he came from that direction and reconvene for next time.
I think I'm going to want to check both of those out. Sometimes, I mean, if it's in the rut, I mean, it might be, it's probably going to be apparent at the time of why he was there. You know, it's going to be, I'll probably chalk it up to, hey, it's the rut and there are does right here. He was coming in to check these does. That's going to be one of the most obvious things. It could be, hey, I was right. Like I hypothesized that this is where he was bedding. This is where he's heading to check does or go to food. I was right. And if I see a big buck, it kind of confirms for me. I can learn more about the area, but I like to use, since we're talking about postseason scouting, I really like to use postseason scouting to discover to unlock new spots because it is that it's that easy to unlock new spots postseason. Whereas in my priority of, because I want a lot of good spots. So in my priority list, like if I see a big buck in a spot on a certain date, like that's giant information for next year, but I got the best information you can get. I saw him right there then. And I'm just going to say, that spot's unlocked.
I love that.
So when I'm postseason scouting, I'm going to use it to find new areas because that time's valuable. I might only get to go postseason scouting like 4 times.
Yeah. Especially when you have to travel and it's not right in your backyard. You know, for me, I've told you this before. I do a lot of scouting just for my truck because where I work is also where I hunt. So when I'm driving in the morning, if I see doe in certain places or whatever, I'm putting a mark on Onyx. If I see a trail that's crossing the road, I'm marking that on Onyx. Right now I'm paying attention to where all the turkey are because I'm actually, there's a really good chance I could actually get in the turkey woods again, finally this year, you know? So
heck yeah.
I'm really, really, I'm excited about that, you know? So when you're earlier in the conversation, you were talking a lot about being able to see these beaten trails and they really stick out and they kind of converge onto these main trails and kind of use them in these high pressure situations. From other conversations that I've listened to, a lot of guys will say finding those beaten trails are great and you're finding where the deer like to travel, but they don't really see the mature bucks they're after using those trails specifically. Where do you lie on that? Do you find that those beaten trails that you find in postseason scouting are then used by the Bucks later on? Or are they just kind of another tool to say, okay, this is where the doe are going, so I want to build off this to find where the Bucks are going to be?
Yeah, it's more the second. Like, because I'm not crazy familiar with this property, because I'm, when I say unlock a spot, you know, it doesn't mean I know the X or the tree I'm going to get in. Yeah, it very well could work out. Like, when I say I unlock a spot, I'm like, I know where bucks like to be within a, you know, acre area, you mm-hmm. know, based on the sign or whatever trails. Yeah, I'm great with a big trail. Like, because I'm going to go in there during the season and I'm going to see deer use the trail. I'm going to, in this area, I can see usually pretty good long ways, 150 yards or so, sometimes more. And I'm going to see if a buck comes from over that way or that way. And then I'm dialing the spot as I'm hunting it. In the efficiency of time's sake, like, I'm going to find the big trails, the big buck sign, chalk it away, go find another spot like that. Where I think what you're talking about, you know, secondary, smaller trails and so forth, like, that comes into play once you get to know a property super, super well. Or maybe different areas to lay out different for different people, because, you know, deer hunting in different regions can be different as far as the amount of sign laid down. Like, I'm looking for the most sign I can possibly find. And in general, that's going to put me where the most bucks will be during the season. Like, I get that they might be 30 yards off the main trail, but like, if I'm hunting there, there's a high likelihood I'm going to see that deer mm-hmm. and that'll help me fine tune it. But in my personality of wanting to just find as many spots as possible to hunt, because I believe that a fresh sit is better than hunting a spot. I'm okay with it taking a long time to fine tune a spot. When I say fine tune, like, I'm going to get in that tree because that buck's going to come from there, mm-hmm. which I think is like, and this is getting subjective, of course, but I think your odds of like hunting a big trail versus a little secondary trail, it's too hard unless you were on the property talking about it. What makes more sense for a buck to be on versus a doe?
Right. Or even further, history with a specific buck or seeing a specific buck do a specific thing.
Right. I'm on a new property. I'm okay with it taking a long time. I love the multi-year story of like, hey, I hunted this last year and I saw a buck from here. And then the next mm-hmm. year I saw him again. And oh, I'm starting to notice that he always comes from that area, even all the does move. That's something you learn over time. Yeah. I don't think that you can go out there and scout that out postseason. And if you can, you're on a different level than me, or you're like on a different wavelength of like knowing how to do that. Mm-hmm. And maybe there are guys that can do that postseason, but I'm kind of like, go, 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 find the most sign possible, mark it on X. I know that these spots are going to unlock good hunts for me. I'm probably going to have it could be different if I was just obsessed with this one buck, you know, and mm-hmm. I was like measuring his track. Like, that would get into a different game for me. But at this point, I'm trying to unlock as many shooter buck spots as possible.
Okay. You've mentioned the story quite a few times here in this conversation. And I know in the past you haven't really, you've toyed around with the idea of recording your sits. And I know this year you had considered getting maybe a small camera and starting to do that. Being that you're starting this new property and it started off so great for you and you're building the story with this specific buck you're hoping to find next year. Any thoughts on recording as you move forward?
Yeah. Yeah, actually. I mean, as you can tell, like, I can talk forever about hunting. I have a lot of thoughts rolling around in my head. I've hunted for 30 years and I just have all these thoughts that I like to talk about mm-hmm. hunting. And the cool thing this year is over the summer, I got to help my nephew learn how to hunt. Like, he's getting into hunting. I think I told you last year, like, I went and traveled back to South Carolina, took him turkey hunting mm-hmm. and my nephews are getting more into hunting. Like, and it's awesome. And so I get to share my information with them. And so this may be more information than you wanted to hear, but basically, like, there's a lot of amazing deer hunting podcasts out there, but they can kind of be confusing maybe for a really new hunter because mm-hmm. they're like these high level buck strategies and theories and so forth. But when you're just getting into it, like, what's the core basics that you want to take to the bank
yes.
that are not going to be confusing for the new hunter based on the level that they're at?
Yes.
And so I'm having to realize, like, as I communicate to them, I don't need to communicate that. It is a thing, but I don't need to communicate to them. Mm-hmm. I just need to communicate the stuff that's not going to be confusing. And so I'm like, I kind of want to build a channel around that potentially.
Okay.
I love just that. Like me teaching my nephews how to hunt, basically.
I love that, man. And I think, and your nephews will love that too. And one of the cool things about these recordings, and I've talked about this before, I may have talked to you about this and kind of touched home. I know you listen to the Southern Outdoorsman.
Great podcast. Yeah.
I love those guys, man. They're great. But they just last week or 2 weeks ago, they released a podcast with a turkey, like an old school veteran turkey hunter. Mm-hmm. And he unfortunately passed away between mm-hmm. when they recorded and when they posted, you know? So for them, it was, they gave a little blurb at the beginning. They're like, this is why we do this. This is why we're interviewing that generation of guys, because, you know, as time goes on, there's less and less of them around to hear their stories and to preserve their knowledge and their experiences and stuff, you know? And he's like, now this is something that, you know, as silly as it may sound, that his daughter can go back and always have and stories to tell their kids and his grandkids or whatever, you know, bring that back into your nephews, you know, in a few years, it might be cool for them to look back and say, hey, look, you know, this is where we were and it's documented now. And then when they have kids, they can show it, you know, there's just something to be said about documenting and photos and video. And my dad was really big into that when I was growing up. He would always have a camera in his hand. He was always recording. Now, granted, we haven't gone back and looked at those films in a long time, but they're there. And when we finally get around to it, they're always going to be there. They're always going to be preserved, you know? So if and when, God willing, it's not anytime in the near future, but if in the future my parents aren't around and I get to talk to my kids about what my parents were like, I can show it to them. And it's the same thing. That whole thing is the same theory or feeling that I have with the recordings I have, you know, and I don't have many of them right now, but I need to pick up on that a little bit, but that's really the core of why I even started all this, just to preserve it for the future, you know? So
yeah, I'm sure it's super that. Meaningful stuff. Like it's not silly at all. I know what you're talking about with that podcast too. That hit home. It was like, man,
yeah.
It is so cool. Cause it's just a different era of hunting and wisdom that is locked in. Now we get to get a view into that.
Mm-hmm.
I never want recording to get in the way of me shooting a big buck, but mm-hmm. I do want to record more stuff while I'm out there, because I might just see the craziest things or have the crazy, you know, when you're in the woods, it's an adventure. Mm-hmm. Like the other day I was out there and I was walking along. I saw this animal laid out like probably 40 yards away. Like I'm back there too. I'm like, oh, there's a dead deer, because it was big, long body. Mm-hmm. I start walking towards it. It's windy, so the it's kind of covering noise. I'm walking towards it. I think it's a dead animal. Uh-huh. I get 6 steps away. And I'm like, maybe when I was like 15 steps away, I was like, oh, that's a hog. That's a dead hog. Okay. And I get like 6 steps away and I start to see it move. And I'm like, I just walked up on a giant sleeping boar. Like it's just sleeping out there in the big woods. And it started to kind of wake up, and like it's so big and fat that it had to like rock back and forth. So it was seriously like it's like going back and forth trying to get up, and it's like waking up at the same time, and it's like shit. And then I had my little 9mm, so I shot it. But
good.
I mean, dude, if that thing had been on, if I'd had that recorded, that video would have been so good.
That would like, been, that's so crazy.
Just the craziest thing.
Dude, that's awesome.
I just walk up on a giant sleeping pig in the middle of nowhere, and it's like a giant boar, and then you shoot it with a handgun that's this big.
That's amazing, dude. I love that. I love that. That's so cool.
So, yeah, I want to just have a GoPro to just capture some of those experiences out there. You never know when they're going to happen.
100%, man. And you know, they have these mounts for, you know, your backpack straps now, and it's really very minimally intrusive, you know, these chest brackets and mounts, or put it on your head or whatever, you know, you plug it in, you just forget about it and you go, you know. I got two more questions for you here as far as scout is concerned. And then I've been dying to hear the Oklahoma story. I really have been. So first off, one of the cool things about postseason scouting for us here in the Northeast and a lot of the northern tier of the country is the presence of snow on the ground. It really, really lets things stand out. And the beautiful thing about snow is the sooner you go after the snow comes down, the more fresh the sign is and what you can really start to rely on. Now, I would venture to guess that you don't typically have that to use in Texas. I don't know about Oklahoma specifically, but I do know that there's snow on like 98% of the ground in the United States right now after that storm came through.
Right. Weeks ago. Yeah, we got snow.
So, it's a twofold question. The first part of the question is, since snow isn't common in your area, how does that change up whether it helps or hurts your postseason scouting right now? And how valuable do you find the sign that you find in the snow, since it's not really a common thing and not something you can rely on happening year after year?
Yeah. First of all, I would say not a great person to ask about somebody who scouts snow, but I will say my thoughts on it because I was thinking about it recently because we got all the snow. We don't usually get snow.
Well, that's what I'm referring to. The fact that you have snow on the ground in Texas now, and it's not something you normally have.
Yeah.
Has it helped or hurt your scouting, or have you not gotten out in the snow to scout? And would you hold that information valuable for next year?
Yeah, I think if I could have, I think it would be dynamite if I could have gone right after the snow. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to go till maybe 3-4 days after. So my thought was, hey, this is very icy, crusty snow. This could throw off where the deer bed, where the deer want to get their food from. Where is it easier in the snow to get their food from? So in my head, I was like, you know what? I don't feel like I can take this information to the bank. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just don't feel like I could take it to the bank. But it did when it melted, it really like made the trails even stick out more, like the big trails that were there. Cause you know, when the ice sits there, it like makes the grass go even down more, or the trails mm-hmm. will leave. So it did kind of like make the sign even more obvious. And it's, I think the biggest thing is like your area, like at my Texas spot right now, the woods are green grass, like a green field in the bottom. Cause those grasses grow up in the trees after leaves come off, the sun comes in. It's like mm-hmm. a green field back in the woods.
It's incredible.
And I have pictures like 2 nights ago of a big buck scraping, actively scraping. So different areas, different deer. Like you have to go into every area with a pretty open mind of like, what do these deer do on this property? Mm-hmm. That's another super fun thing about just changing areas. Like, you know, everything I know about deer on this area, I'm going to try and be really open-minded about what they're doing here and just let the sign tell me and be open-minded to the deer, let the deer tell me what they're doing.
Yeah. That's really been hard for me, historically speaking. You know, being a math guy, you know, you find a pattern, you repeat the pattern, and the results mm-hmm. repeat themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And to an extent, you can use some of that in the deer woods, right? Like, you know, if a thicket is going to hold a deer in one place in high pressure, chances are a thicket in another place of high pressure is going to hold deer also. But that doesn't mean they're going to use the terrain exactly the same. It doesn't mean that they're going to use that finger the same way they use that finger or whatever the case may be. So it's really difficult for me at times. I'm trying to get better at it, to do what you're saying, to go in with an open mind and look at it like a clean slate and not pull from some of that previous data or information.
But I think that's super helpful if you're into pattern recognition, like the mathematic brain, where you're like, yeah, it's a different box. But like, you know, like my new territory in Oklahoma, they bed in this stuff that looks, on e-scouting, you're like, that's nothing. That's a field. That doesn't look like where you would go on e-scouting. But the deer love that spot. And so I want to repeat the pattern. So I get on X. I'm like, this is what this area looks like on e-scouting. So I'm going to scroll across the map of this 100,000 acres. I'm going to find other areas that set up the same way. So you can still use the repeating pattern. You just got to realize it's a different.
Sure.
Different
and you got to confirm it, right? You can't just go into it and say this worked there, so it's got to work here. You know, it's like that worked there, so let me keep my eyes open for the same thing here and noticing it rather than expecting it, I think is pretty much what we're getting at here.
On postseason scouting is just one of the things to take to the bank on postseason scouting is just like mm-hmm. recognize the level of sign that is on the whole property and then categorize that into how extreme that sign is for what you decide to take to the bank and use for next season.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. And you got to put
miles on to be able to see that.
Right. You got to see the whole picture to be able to analyze the whole picture kind of thing. It's actually really funny you say that. And I swear, guys, we did not coordinate any questions or anything here before this podcast, because my last scouting question, if you have a pencil, you might want to write these down, is I want you to put in order your sign from most important to least important out of this Ooh. List of different types of sign that I have. You know, when you're saying that you need to categorize sign. So that's like, it's just a perfect way to close up the scouting conversation. So here's what I got. I got between beds, trails, rubs, scrapes, food, and shit. What do you order them from most to least important for you in postseason scouting specifically to take to the bank in hunting season the following year?
I got to go scrapes. Got to go scrapes.
Scrapes number one.
Scrapes give me number one.
But real quick, follow-up question. Are we talking primary scrapes, secondary scrapes, or any scrape?
That depends on the property you're at. I would say for me, what I've learned is like my Texas area, there's scrapes everywhere. Mm-hmm. My Oklahoma area, there's not scrapes everywhere. So when you do mm-hmm. find a scrape, it's a bigger deal.
Okay.
Even if I would say scrapes are the biggest, I'm going to come out of left field and say Did you say shit or poop? Are we allowed to cuss?
Scat, shit, poop. I don't care. It's all
okay.
Yeah, we're good.
I would say poop is...
This is my chat. This is my show, damn it.
Okay. I like it. Scoop, poop. Poop has been the biggest thing from a new big thing on my radar. And I'll tell you, like, what I've found is, like, and once again, I'm not trying to hunt the buck. Like, I'm trying to find areas of serious deer concentration, like where when I go hunt there, I'll see a deer every time, because when the deer leave their bedding, they always come to the staging area. And what I've learned in the last year is this poop phenomenon, and this could be different in different people's area, but it probably applies, is there are certain areas where when the does come out of the bedding, they like stand in this area for a little bit, like, you know, staging area, you'll call it. They kind of get going for the day. They stand in this one area and they poop. And I've got it on camera so many times. I have three different areas, different doe groups, where they're just there every day on public land, like pressured, not super pressured where I'm at, but it's public land, you know, there's pressure. But that tells me that there's a pattern to what deer are doing. And when you're scouting and you find this area where the grass is beaten down or the leaves are beaten down or on this little knoll, and there's 4 or 5 obvious poop areas in a 15, 20 foot radius circle, you can hunt there, obviously, provided you're on a good wind or whatever, and you're going to see deer. And guess what? During the rut, pre-rut, there should be a lot of bucks moving right in that general area. And then you can refine it. But I'm all about using post-season to find like the major deer concentration areas, because you know you're going to go in there, you're going to see deer, you're going to have good hunts. So poop, good poop.
It's one of my favorites, man. It really is.
Yeah. I haven't thought about it for years. I was just like deer poop in the woods, but my camera's, you know, just circumstantial.
Well, the way I always saw it was like your perspective is really cool. Like you've seen deer go to the same place and just drop over and over and over different deer in the same place.
Yeah.
I've never thought of it that way. I always held it very valuable for me, because if I was walking through a place and there were different size scat, different age scat, fresh, old, crumbled, you know, whatever, that shows me that not only is it a place that is frequented, it is a place that is frequented by different deer and different size deer. So that one little spot that has all bunch of different poop isn't just a whole bunch of poop. It tells a story without speaking. And I love that. I love that.
And what I would like to, this is getting deeper into the poop topic, because it's like really caught my brain, my deer brain. It's a shitty conversation. It's really caught my deer brain. Is like, I would love to talk to a deer biologist who focuses on deer poop. That could be like, okay, when do deer poop? Like, is there rhyme or reason to when they poop? Like, I think there is. Like, obviously, there's rhythms to feeding. Obviously, mammals poop a certain time after feeding, typically. How does it work for deer? So when you find a bunch of poop in one area, I think I've lit on the spot where it's like, okay, they're pooping after they get up from bed and they're about to go out for their evening. But like, what about when you find random poop out in the woods? Like, what can we learn about deer from poop? That's what,
okay,
I want to talk to a deer biologist about that. Anyways, poop is the second shit on the
chronicles.
The deer shit chronicles. I'm telling you, I think there's valuable insight to be learned from deer shit.
Dude, that's great. I love that. I love that. That's it.
I'm really into this shit.
Oh yeah, man. I love that. All right. So we got scrapes. We got scat. They're off the board. What's your next thing?
Rubs.
Okay.
Rubs are next, especially in areas where there's not, like I said, you identify your area and what's a lot for your area, you know? So I'd say rubs is next. Okay. What else? What, trails?
We got beds and food and anything else that maybe I didn't add to this list. Feel free to add in as well.
Yeah. I would say trails will be next in adjacent to those, to that sign. I'm confident that those big trails near that big sign will be productive come the following season. Like, there's a reason those trails are bigger than the other trails. And late season, post-season scouting, those trails are going to be more obvious than other parts of the year.
100%.
This is my thought. But yeah, the poop, the little poop circles are a new thing for me. I'm pretty excited about them. Like, to me, they're like they're a big deal as like, they're second. They're second on the list for me.
All right. So we got beds and food left.
Beds.
Okay. I gotta be honest. I did not expect
a lot of food out there.
I did not expect food to be last. Well,
there's just a lot of food out there, and it's not always easy, but where I'm hunting, it's, you know, there's private green fields or there's giant acorn area. So like, I'm never going to be able to identify. I'd rather identify where the deer want to be in this monotonous territory. Mm-hmm. It's way too hard to determine through scouting postseason what food source exactly to the area. I'm going to get I'm going to get a bow shot if I know the other sign more than if I know that sign.
Understood.
On public
land. And I also, go ahead.
On public land. Like, obviously, if you're hunting private land, you're like, my corn pile means more than all the rest of it because they're coming. That's different.
Yeah.
My corn pile trumps your poop circle.
Yeah, nice. So, it's really funny because for what just happened there was I'm so used to food being the limiting factor once the cold weather hits. And you just told me that you still have green on the ground in Texas right now, so it makes sense that food is lower on your list because it isn't a limiting factor in your area. Versus for me right now, food would be a little bit higher on that list for me simply because knowing what they're eating and what they're not eating in late season are both extremely valuable when the food sources are reduced to limited availability.
That's such a well put statement and so true. And I happen to hunt two areas where the food, like my Oklahoma, I talked to a guy who said he's lived there his whole life, never seen this many acorns this year.
Yeah, this year was crazy.
And where I'm hunting is nothing but oak trees everywhere for thousands and thousands of acres.
Wow.
That's not a limiting factor.
Did you find, a bonus question here, did you find that having that much of a harvest and that many oak trees spanned for forever and ever, did you find that you saw less deer movement because of that than you expected to see at certain times of the year? Like, I know this year, my cousin, for example, over in Jersey, last year, he was hunting the same patch of woods that he hunted last year. It's actually a deer management program where you have to sign up to hunt these places and you're required to shoot a certain number of deer each year type of deal. And he didn't see nearly the amount of movement that he expected until later in the season. So I was just curious if you saw the same thing in a completely different temperature area, completely different region of the country, what you saw with that?
I saw a lot of deer movement.
Okay.
It's my first year hunting there, so I've only hunted it on the biggest acorn crop ever. Gotcha. So I don't have anything to compare it to.
No sample pool.
Yeah. Now, I could segue that into a bonus in-season scouting thing, which is a new thing that I think I'm going to be big on, is observation sits. Mm-hmm. I always was against observation sits. Like, no, if I'm going in the woods, I want to kill a deer in season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But now I'm like, observation sits are freaking gold. Like, I can see three different groups of does, and that's constrained by where you're hunting. Like, most of the time I've hunted places where I can only see like 40 yards, but now that I have the option to hunt places where I can see down into cover, thick, everything, I'm like, I'm kind of big on it. I think it's well worth the time to hunt somewhere where you can cover a lot of ground with your eyes during the season. And then
100%.
Because think about if you bust into thick cover and you're like, I know this is a great area, but then you ruin it in all kinds of ways you could never know. Whereas if you just sat back up on this hill, looked down in that cover, got to see how all the deer move in there during the evening. And then the next time the conditions are right, you go slip down there and you can get it done in two or three hunts versus ruining it.
That's awesome. I love that.
So love poop that. Circles and observation sits are new for me this year.
There you go. Okay. So is there anything that you would like to add about postseason scouting that we didn't touch on before we dive into your Oklahoma buck story or Texas, whichever one you want to share on the show?
Super quickly, I'd just say, like, one of the questions I asked myself when I was like, where do I want to go? I think if you've got a big area that's really hard to read the sign in, like big woods or something, I think it's going to be way easier to read the sign now than any other time of the year, even more so there. So if you do have a hunch about a big, vast area that's like hard to tell what the deer are doing because it's so big and monotonous, this is maybe the one time of year where you could actually do that. So take advantage now.
I could get with that, especially just to add to that real quick. There's this one spot on my way to and from work. I've hunted it a little bit in the past. Last year, I threw a couple sits at it, saw some deer after legal light, but never took anything out of there. But when you're driving down the road in the spring, it is in the summer, it is just the thickest thing. Like, you can't see more than 50 yards into the woods from the road. And if you were to get into it, it gets even thicker type of deal, because it goes kind of downhill. So that downhill type of deal from the car gives you a little bit more distance to see. I drive past that now. I could see hundreds of yards through what I couldn't see 10 feet into earlier in the season. You know, so to your point, now is a perfect time to get out. And even if it's not for being able to see farther than you normally could, it's sure as hell easier to walk through the woods now than it is when everything is leaf color covered and you're dragging through everything rather than just being able to walk a little cleaner.
And you can see sign 100 yards away.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, definitely. It all comes together. It's definitely a tool in the toolbox for anyone who's serious here. So I'm going to take 30 seconds. I'm going to go take a leak real quick. And then we're going to hear this story because I've been dying to hear it.
Dying. I killed 2 bucks. Which one do you want to hear?
Whichever one you want to share.
All right. Brought to you by Alp. We're sponsored by Tucker Carlson for oral use only. This is the only nicotine pouch that is designed specifically for oral use. Thanks for sending our way, Tucker. Really appreciate you trusting us with your product. I think I'll have another. Right now I'm partaking in the 6 milligram Mountain Wintergreen. You can DM Tucker directly. And tell him I sent you.
I'm sure Tucker would love that. That's hilarious. That's great. I'm sitting there taking a leak. This show is brought to you by Alp and Tucker.
You can actually hear, you could hear me.
I got the headphones in. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's awesome. So I took the 30 seconds to think about it. I think, now correct me if I'm wrong, but your Texas buck this year seems like a culmination of the work that you've put in and all these years of scouting and a lot of historical data and your postseason scouting last year that really allowed you to put that X down where it needed to be and get the job done relatively quickly. I think I'd like to hear your Oklahoma buck simply because it was a newer place. You didn't have the history. It took a lot more scouting and trusting your gut in that situation. And being that it was a travel type of spot, you really had to make the most of the time that you had in the woods when you had it. So I'd really love to hear about that.
Yeah. So full disclosure, the Oklahoma buck was a private land buck.
Okay.
It's the only time I've hunted private land for a deer in like 7 years. Okay. 7 or 8. But anyways.
Were you only hunting private land in Oklahoma or were you also hunting some public?
I only, like the deer I killed in Oklahoma was the only private land hunt I've done in forever. So I've only hunted private land once in like 7 or 8 years.
Gotcha. So
I've been hunting Oklahoma, but I've got a buddy. I actually went out. Yeah. I got a buddy that has 75 acres in Oklahoma and he's generous enough to let me go out there and hunt, and I hunt hogs out there. And I helped him do some work on his property this year. And he's a buddy that I met through music. Awesome guy. I didn't have a lot of time. I just needed to get out of the woods that day. You know, still deer season, late season. I think it was like December 22nd or something. And I was kind of just like, at first I was like, I want to go hog hunt, but I want to see some parts of the property. And there's going to be like a little bit of a whitetail lesson here. So I wanted to see some parts of the property that nobody had been to. And it's 75 acres, but it's 3 fields, 3 feeders, cameras on the feeders. And we had not seen a shooter buck, hardly any bucks, for like 3 weeks. So this is a deer that we saw like 3.5 weeks before, maybe. So we knew there was a big one around, but literally no evidence of him being alive for like 3.5 weeks. No pattern, no nothing. I was just like, I've never been to the backside of the property. And I talked to the landowner and he was like, yeah, nobody's been back there for like 2 years, like even set foot back there. And it's like this very cool sliver of the property. And there's a pond back there, a little open grassy area. And any time that there's an area late season that's not had human pressure, you better put that on your radar as worthwhile. So I just scouted my way back there. I've never been back there. I scouted my way back there. A lot of trails, dropping acorns, big bumper crop year. I can see these acorns getting hit. I can see beds, thick cedars underneath the acorn trees. And I'm like, I want to get up somewhere where I can see a little bit, but also have some like close quarter shots. So I got my saddle up in an oak tree that was dropping with the feeding sign underneath it. And I was kind of in a corner with the wind. So I kind of had to be, I couldn't push too far. Long story short, I had to be in this tree for the wind. A lot of trails going by me. So anyways, it was the first deer I saw. I look across the open area. I just see big antlers. He comes to the edge of a fence, looks around, just giant, and jumps the fence. And he goes up towards the feeders. But we're talking, he's probably 250 yards from any feeder at this point when I see him. I'm probably 350 yards from a feeder. And keep in mind, we hadn't seen him on camera. at all. Mm-hmm. And the wind was kind of blowing from the feeder to where he was going. I'm theorizing in my head, like, he still wants to know what's going on over at the main activity spot where the deer, where the does are using the feeder. Mm-hmm. And there's all this activity. So he's going in there. He's doing a little scent checking. He goes out of my sight. I just thought, hey, that's cool. I saw a giant buck and I'm never going to get to see him again. No big deal. I got a video of him. I sent it to the landowner. I was like, this is a shooter, right? He's like, yeah, get him. But he didn't answer for me for like 25 minutes, which is fine, obviously.
No, how dare he?
How dare he? He should be waiting on his phone. And totally. It was like a God thing because I'm hesitant to shoot big bucks on other people's property.
Sure.
I just wanted to make sure he was totally cool with it, you know?
No, of course, I understand that. And I'm sure he appreciates that too.
And the chances of me obviously seeing a buck like that are so low anyways. It's like, this is 75 acres. It's not some giant managed property where big mm-hmm. bucks are coming into feeders. And so it was kind of a God thing. It was like, I literally looked down at my phone. I see him reply after 25 minutes. I looked down, I see, he's like, definitely a shooter, get him. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, the moment has passed, you know? But then I look up and I see antlers walking towards me. I see it and I'm like, oh my goodness. Like literally I look at my phone, I put it in my pocket, I look up and he's walking towards me. He's like 45 yards away. So he had gone and done a loop to check, probably scent check the feeders and all that sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then he was coming back towards me. He probably was checking like, you know, hey, and I could make this more obvious, I'll show you on a map, but he's probably checking to see like any human presence on the property. Cause mm-hmm. the way it sets up, like with that wind. And he's like, okay, coast is clear. So he goes over there, checks, okay, coast is clear. And then he's coming back towards me. Maybe he was going to feed on the acorn tree. He's coming right towards me. And I got that video. I got it on video.
Did Alex you? Jones.
Yeah, I got it on video.
The shot?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's on my Instagram, brother. Wait, got it on video.
You got the actual shot on video?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great video. It's like that magnetic phone thing that you can put.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. I was going to, that's why after this, I was going to talk to you about that. I hadn't even thought about it. I'm literally in real time going to your Instagram as we speak, and I'm going to find this because I can't believe I missed that.
And while you're looking for it, like kind of a little wrench in the situation, there was a lot of fog that day and my rangefinder wasn't working that great. So when I first got in the stand, I ranged a bunch of spots.
Okay.
But then like later towards evening, there was a lot of fog and I couldn't range. But because I'd ranged earlier, I knew the range he was at. And so, yeah, he hit like the 23-yard mark probably.
Okay.
Walked right down one of the main trails. So you're talking, we talked about main trails earlier, beating down mm-hmm. trails. Mm-hmm. This giant buck was walking down a main, like a heavily worn trail. Mm. Yeah, I hit him with the mat and he stopped and looked, sent it, shot him.
I just saw it. That was like the perfect shooting lane. It was like that, like if that deer would have stopped two steps earlier or one step later.
Literally,
You don't have the shot.
Yeah.
Like that was beautiful.
And I learned this you can never do this perfectly because you never know what the deer is going to do. But I learned this a long time ago. I didn't get to shoot a giant buck many years ago because I was like right when I needed him to stop and he mm-hmm. took like two more steps. So on this one, I was like right as he was coming into view so that like he would get another step or two.
Yeah.
So time in the mirror is like, there's something to that too.
100%.
You never know how to work out, but like it's something to 100%. Think about.
And I'm not a huge proponent of shooting a moving deer. Honestly, even if it's mm-hmm. close, there's so many variables. And even as simple as the deer's leg comes back as your arrow enters and it stops it from penetrating all the way. There's just so much that could happen.
That's bow hunting. But yeah, I was blessed with a perfect shot. I mean, it was perfect. So I get down, I go, it was a full pass through with your arrow. First thing,
first, thank you very much.
First confirmed kill from me with your arrow, and blood trail was great, man. It was like, I still gave him time, but he probably ran 50 yards and then mm-hmm. it was the biggest deer I ever shot. So like,
yeah,
walk. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Congratulations. Well,
keep in mind, man, like I've been hunting South Carolina mostly and Texas pressure public. Like I just haven't had access to big deer.
That's amazing.
And so that was incredible. Like walked up and I was like, yep, I'm getting that one shoulder mounted. So he's at the taxidermy now and already probably eaten half of them.
That's awesome, man. Did you, any chance you got a score? Not, and I'm asking about the score. That's the very last thing for a reason, because to me it's right. Great, but it's not important. You know what I mean? But yeah. Did you happen to have it scored by the taxidermist at all?
Not yet. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, he's not in that ballpark of like, whoa, score. You know, for me, like I said, I'm good with lots of little wins, but for me, it's like obviously my biggest deer. I think he was like 19 inches or like 17 and seven. He's like 18. See, I don't even know. Like 18 inches wide. He had some big points. Like,
yeah.
I think he was probably like 135, maybe 135, okay. 140. Maybe. I don't think he pushed
145. I heard somewhere where it was like, I forget the exact number. I want to say it was something egregious, like 90%. Like 90% of hunters will never shoot a deer 120 or larger, or 60%. It was something like that. Somewhere in the higher numbers. But yeah. Like a majority of hunters will never shoot a 120. You know, yeah. So that's like, don't get me wrong, the 200s are great. And some of these gnarly big Coke can looking things walking through the woods, like they're so cool. They're great. They're going to get your adrenaline pumping, you know. But I feel like we focus so much on those bigger ticket deer that it's like,
yeah,
people don't feel, not that you don't, not that I'm saying this about you, but yeah. Sometimes people don't feel as, quote, accomplished when they shoot a beautiful 120 or 130 or something even like this. And I don't even think this broke 110.
Really?
You know what I mean? Like they're the. To me, it's the age that's more important. If you could get a deer that's 3 or 4 years old or older within shooting range and take it, especially a doe, I will die on the hill of a 4-year-old doe is harder to kill than a 4-year-old buck, in my personal opinion, you know. But if you could get them close enough, that's win number one. And if you can put an arrow in them, that's win number two, you know. So.
I'm with you on that. Like, you just have, there's got to be wins for different stages of your hunting career. Like
100%.
In other words, like if it's your first year, you're a major success if you shoot anything.
100%. My buddy and you started should be hunting. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, you should be, this is my personal opinion, right? Like, after hunting for 30 years, like, you should be very, like, happy shooting anything that gets your adrenaline going. And, like, it's very, be realistic about what deer are out in your woods. Like, I've been hunting South Carolina. Like, if I go back and hunt South Carolina public and I shoot a basket 8, like that's a big deal, you know. And all of it's like the winds come in different ways. Like, did you guess this and this right based on reading the sign in this and this way, and then you got to shoot. Now, you know, versus if you're on private and you have years and years of experience with this property, and you're obviously going to pass probably on the 110 8 point because you know what's there, and like that's what you're focused on. There's so many different variables to it all, but yeah, just putting a number on the score of whether you're successful or not, of how big a deer you got, is crazy, because seeing deer is a win. If you're hunting public pressured areas, and if you're getting to go out in the woods and find time to be in God's creation, like that's a win too.
100%. Now, the way I look at it like this, and I've always thought this way, but I kind of just formulated a way to put it into words in the moment right now. You should know when it's time to progress to the next level of your hunting journey, when when a certain caliber of deer doesn't get you excited anymore. What I mean by that is, I have always been the kind of person, when I see a deer, as long as it doesn't have spots and it gets me going, I'm gonna shoot it. Well, as of last year or 2 years ago, I've let deer walk that I was excited when I heard him coming in, but when I saw what it was like, okay, not what I'm looking for. I'm good with it.
Yeah.
Now, if I would have sat there and my stomach is turning because I'm like, oh my goodness, how could I let that deer go? I'm probably going to shoot that deer. You know, it's all about you and your intrinsic motivation and your intrinsic feeling. If you see a deer and you are excited that it's in front of you, then you go ahead and shoot it. Don't worry about what somebody else is going to say. But if you sit there and you look at a deer and you go, nah, that doesn't do it for me, then there's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with it either way, you know, as long as, again, it's within the confinements of the law and what the states allow, which is why I'm a big proponent where I feel like the states should start stepping in some way, shape, or form and encourage more doe to be shot and less bucks to be shot.
Yeah.
You know, but it's such a touchy subject, and we're pretty much out of time here, so we don't have to get into that, you know, but there's always got to be this happy medium of, as long as it's legal, whether you would do it or I would do it or we wouldn't, as long as it's legal, who are we to say somebody can't do it or not be happy for somebody for doing that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's the state's job to say, okay, we understand that people find happiness doing it this way, but it's starting to hurt the overall quality of the herd, the hunting quality, whatever the case may be. It's their job to set in and set the limits. It's our job to live within those limits. And that's kind of where I'll leave that at that point.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. If it gets you fired up and gets you excited to be out there, you know, harvest that animal. 100%. And don't let anybody bust your balls for it. Like
100%.
My rule is 3.5 years or older for bucks. And I got people that give that bust my balls about it. But, you know, for shooting stuff that's too small, but I'm like, it's 3.5 years old. It's on Pressure Public. Like I'm at the point where I'm going to shoot that. And maybe 100%. One day like you said, I'll know when it's time to pass on this deer.
Yeah.
And another variable, and I know we're out of time, but another variable is like, how much time do you have? How much time do you have to be out in the woods?
Yep.
Like, what if you only get to go out 3 or 4 times? You shoot whatever's legal and be fired up that you got to do it.
Absolutely. Take the opportunities as they come, when they come, and run with it. Or if you only have 4 days and you choose to not shoot something, live with it and be okay with it. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with passing something. What I'm getting at is just because you only have 4 days to hunt, don't just shoot whatever to say I shot something. Again, if it gets you, it all goes back to what I said before. If it excites you, do it. And if it doesn't, don't. But then also don't sit there and sulk all year because you made that choice. And if you do, remember that for next year so you don't make the same mistake twice. You know, like I don't.
Hunting is a personal journey.
It absolutely is.
It really is.
Ben, I want to thank you, man, for taking the time out of your day and coming to join us, man. The conversation, dude, I always love getting to sit down and chat with you and catching up with you and all that good stuff.
Likewise.
For the listeners, if they want to find your music, some of your hunting video, whatever, let them know where they can find you.
Ben Coleman Music. Ben Coleman Music, Instagram mainly, but Facebook, YouTube, all that good stuff. And Spotify, Apple Music, and Texas Country Radio.
There you go, man. And throw one more curveball at you. If you had to recommend one song, the first song, if they never listened to you at all, and there's one song that you would suggest that they listen to first, which one would it be?
Rainy Days.
I love that
Rainy
song.
Days. Thanks, brother. I love brother. That one. I love Absolutely, your music man. Too, by the way. You're very talented.
Hey thanks, man. I haven't written anything in a long time, but there's ancient artifacts sitting on my Instagram, you know, from years ago. So, all right, man. Well, again, thanks again for the time. Great information, great knowledge here. I hope the listeners got a little value out of it. And if you guys did, you know what to do. Scroll on down to the bottom, leave a nice review. A 5-star review goes a long way in kind of bumping this podcast up to the top. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great day.
Heck yeah.
But yeah, man. No, I don't want to end it. I just want to stop the recording.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.